I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. Thornton Park in Orlando boasts one of the oldest oak trees in the city. The live oak on Constitution Green is, by some estimates, 175 years old, and it's on the city's list of significant trees. The city leases the land the tree grows on from a family that may now want to develop it, and it's galvanised a growing number of supporters who fear the tree could be cut down. To talk about the arguments for and against preserving this tree and other historic trees and green spaces in the city, I'll talk to Eric Rawlings from the Soil and Water Conservation Board, who's spearheading an effort to save the tree. I'll also speak to Greg Logan, the Managing Director of the real estate consulting firm RCL Co. But first, 90.7's news director Catherine Welch has been following the story and attended a rally over the weekend. She'll join us to explain how the debate about the tree got started. That's ahead on Intersection. Orlando residents in the Thornton Park neighbourhood are trying to save one of the oldest oaks in the city. It sits on a patch of land called Constitution Green Park. The land is owned privately. The city has an agreement with the owners to take care of it. But now developers are eyeing the parcel. That leaves neighbours and some city officials trying to figure out a way to save the tree. 90.7's news director, Catherine Welch, has been following the story and joins us. Catherine, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
Well, how did this all start?
To get to the beginning, we need to go all the way back to 1987. That is when the landowners, the Caruso family, wanted to put a Winn-Dixie there. To save the tree and scuttle the grocery store project, the city signed a lease where it pays taxes on the parcel of land and takes care of the maintenance and pays $10 for the lease. Now, there have been two contracts between the city and Jim Caruso. The latest contract expired in October of 2005. The city says the lease has since been running on a month-to-month basis.
Well, Catherine, how do we know someone wants to develop the land?
Orlando City Commissioner Patty Sheehan says residents saw crews out digging in the land and contacted her. She says developers have done soil sampling and that they're doing their due diligence.
So, Catherine, Mill Park Development wants to build a mid-rise office apartment complex. You know, what are the concerns? Are residents focused on just saving the tree, or are they upset with the development plan as well?
Well, there was a rally around the tree over the weekend, and while there were concerns about losing the green space, this tree, estimated to be about 175 years old, is definitely at the heart of their argument. Orlando resident Jim Serrano lives nearby. He was at the rally. He drives by this tree every day on his way to work, and I think he really captured the concerns.
There's so many intangibles that come from having this type of space here, especially an organism that takes hundreds of years to reach its full maturity. To wipe that out for the benefit of a very few people who will benefit greatly from that, I don't feel that this piece of ground right here, everything that sprouts up from this area, should be viewed as sacred.
Well, Catherine, how big is this movement to save the tree?
The online petition turned a week old over the weekend and had more than 5,000 signatures. At the rally, there were about 160 people by my count, and Mayor Buddy Dwyer has weighed in on this issue on his blog, saying while the owners have every right to develop the land, they should not be allowed to remove the historic tree. Now, if you go to Constitution Green, the tree is smack in the middle of it, and the branches reach out covering more than half of the parcel. I would estimate. So not removing the tree and building anything of substance, I am no developer, but it seems to be a difficult task to build around it.
So what can the mayor do within his power to save this tree?
Well, there is an ordinance that any healthy tree with a trunk diameter of more than 30 inches qualifies as an historic tree. What teeth that ordinance has is yet to be seen.
Mm-hmm. And the Caruso family owns the land. What's just keeping them from just going ahead and building?
Well, as City Commissioner Patty Sheehan explained it to me, the property is zoned for a certain height, and the developers must want to go higher, thus needing approval from the city.
Okay, Catherine, so what's next?
Well, the city says there have been conversations, but nobody has filed any application for development or tree removal. Now, there has been no formal notification to terminate this lease in the 30-day window that's sort of been part of the lease since it started. I reached out to Jim Caruso, still waiting to hear back from him. Now, Commissioner Sheehan says the city tried to buy the land at market rate within the last 6 months, but that went nowhere. And she says there's another request out there to buy the land. Organized organizers of the rally over the weekend made a point to collect email addresses, and they're ready to organize their troops to fight for the tree at City Hall should it come to that.
I've been speaking to 90.7's news director Catherine Welch about that historic tree. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
I'm joined in the studio now by Eric Rawlings from the Soil and Water Conservation Board. Eric, welcome to Intersection.
Thank you for having me.
And also joining us here is real estate analyst Greg Logan from RCL Co. Greg, thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks for asking me.
Well, I want to ask you both a question first. I mean, there's about 5,000 signatures on an online petition to save this tree, Constitution Green. Let's start with a simple question. What is it about this tree that, you know, gets people so passionate? And Eric, if you want to lead off.
Sure. I think we're above 5,200 now. And it's not just the tree, it's the tree and the green space that goes along with it. A lot of people shared a lot of memories, whether it be weddings or graduations in that park.
Greg, what are your thoughts? Why is it that people get so riled up about a tree?
Trees have been there for a long time. They, they provide shade. They give you a sense of history.
Well, Eric, let me ask you, what is the argument for saving this tree? I've been given a range of estimates for age, somewhere between 125 to up to 175 years old. So it's a significant tree. It's one of the oldest in the city. Why save it?
We're really limited on green space, and I'm a real estate agent by profession, and I understand that that property is privately owned, but it has been the city park for the last 30 years. People have come to use that as a park. I think that some of the other things that people might want to consider is that people that live downtown need green space. There's over 3,000 units going up right now in the city of Orlando, and they need places to walk their dog and some place to relax and recreate.
Isn't this just down the street from Lake Eola Park?
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty sizable city park just up the street a little ways. And actually, this is not a park. This is just, you know, privately owned land. I guess if, you know, you really wanted to preserve it, why not buy it?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, and I think the city of Orlando has tried to purchase the property. And from our aspect and from the community's concern is that we're not given the opportunity to purchase it. Mm-hmm. We don't know the price. We don't know the terms. We've reached out to the Caruso family and the management company, but it's been falling on deaf ears. So give us the opportunity. And even if it were a city and a private partnership, or if it were a land trust acquisition like they did on the south side of Lake Eola, just give us a number. Give us something to go on so we can preserve it for future generations.
Mm-hmm. And so you referenced the Caruso family. That's the family that owns the piece of land, and they're leasing it to the city. So let me ask you a question about that, because my understanding is it's been about 10 years since the city and that family who own the land have had a formal contract in place, and the last one expired in 2005. And since then, it's been a month-to-month basis. Do you think the city should have seen this argument coming?
Well, I thought that this was it has been designated as a park for the last 30 years, but like you said, it has been leased from the Caruso family. So I think that since I moved here in 89, I always thought it was a public park. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that there was another option. And I didn't know that they had that the lease had been has expired. But I do believe it's a month to month, and it is cancelable on either side with a 30-day notice.
Mm-hmm. For a tree that old, though, that's kind of not much of a turnaround time, 30 days.
No, it's not. And I think this is why we wanted to start early and try to work out an agreement before something does happen. A lot of times on environmental issues, it's right up to the last minute and then nothing can be done. We've been really peaceful, and we've been really supportive of all the city of their decisions. We just want to make sure that we have a conversation and an opportunity to purchase the land before it is utilized for another building.
Mm-hmm. So, Greg, I mean, you made the argument before that within that kind of area, there are parks in walkable distance. So it seems from your point of view, the argument might be more about the tree than the green space.
I think the argument's bigger than that. I think that I can certainly understand wanting to save a tree in your neighborhood and to think locally like that. I think if you're making an environmental argument, for the same amount of development that could take place on this small property, you'd need 3 to 4 times as much land in the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there are probably at least 30,000 more people coming into the city every day than actually live there. We have a very high jobs to housing ratio. In other words, there's a lot more jobs there than there is housing. And so from an environmental perspective, you're putting a lot of nitrous oxide in the air every day by cars coursing up and down I-4, time lost to traffic congestion and so forth. And so the more people live close to their jobs, the more people you put in the city, you can develop on sites like this at a much higher density and use a lot less land than you would in other places. And so I think if you're going to make the environmental argument, you have to think about, you know, this area is doubling in size over the next 40 years. There'll be another, 3 million people here. And where's the best place to put them? Should we scatter them all around the region and knock down trees in other places and at a much lower density? Should we put development where we already have infrastructure, where you have a walkable neighborhood where people can walk to their job, walk to work, and take a lot of cars off the road, reduce the amount of nitrous oxides being put into the air? Development in this area is what we would characterize as smart growth. And I realize that growth anywhere, especially if it's in your backyard, is tough to deal with. It's, you know, the neighbors, you know, in theory, might like the idea of smart growth and developing where it makes sense. But if it's right in your backyard, that's harder to deal with. But from an environmental perspective, developing in the downtown area, walkable to over 70,000 jobs, is smart growth.
Here's a question, though, Greg. I mean, if, say, the developer were to go ahead and take out the tree and put a piece of, a building on that land, which then brought more people into the core. I mean, that doesn't mean that you're not still going to get that development out in the suburbs. I mean, it seems like the balance has yet to be struck between that smart growth you were talking about and having some restraints on development in the kind of the green belt.
Actually, there have been studies done. For example, when Atlantic Station was built in Atlanta, the EPA did a study and looked at what is the impact of development in the city versus in the suburbs. And they found, this is the Environmental Protection Agency, found a 3-to-1 benefit for development in the city, that impacted, three times less land, similar amount of land being developed in the suburbs. So there is a connection. Right now, cities are growing at a faster pace than the suburbs. You have a younger generation that's coming to the market, the Gen Ys, and they value urban places. They're not as interested in driving cars. They want to live in the city. They see living there as the cool place to be. And so, and there aren't that many sites in the downtown area, close in to where you're really walkable to services. There's a grocery store walkable here right next to the park I mentioned earlier. And so you can really meet all your daily needs without having to get in your car and drive and put more pollution in the air, which, will probably kill a lot of other trees.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. I'm talking to Greg Logan. He's a real estate consultant from RCL Co. Also, Eric Rollings from the Soil and Water Conservation Board. You can join the conversation online on our Facebook page by sending us a tweet at WMFE Orlando or with an email to intersection@wmfe.org. We'll continue the conversation with Greg Logan and Eric Rollings about the tree on Constitution Green after a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. I'm talking with Greg Logan from the real estate consulting firm RCL Co. and Eric Rollings from the Soil and Water Conservation Board about the fate of the live oak tree on Constitution Green in Thornton Park. Eric, Greg's talking about smart growth and smart development in the downtown core. I mean, does that argument stack up when you consider the kind of emotional argument for saving a tree this old?
Well, sure. And I think that there is an environmental component to this, but it's also a quality of life issue as well. The park that was mentioned, Lake Eola, is a fantastic park. It's really the heart of the city, but there is a maximum density that park can handle on a daily basis. You pick any nice day down there, and it's really, you can't really throw a frisbee, and you're really dodging more people than you are actually walking. Whenever you increase the density so much by population, there should be a comparable amount to handle as a city green space. Project DTO, which was a study that the downtown Orlando and Mayor Dyer's office came up with to find out in the next 10 years, what is Orlando going to look like and what does it need? What are the benefits and what are the cons?
And then our number one thing that came back was a lack of green space. Orlando's only at 4% plus or minus, and other comparable cities are at 10 to 12%. And I know that the mayor's office and the city residents really are concerned and want to build on that. And I think taking this away and you're just decreasing the percentages even you they with the ones you want to really increase.
Mm-hmm. Are people actually playing Frisbee on Constitution Green?
Yes. Yes. When we were there, we did an interview underneath a tree, and there were two classrooms of school kids having lunch underneath a tree. Mm-hmm. You know, it's maybe sometimes people don't see it as if there's not a bunch of people using it, but that's kind of the beauty of a park. It's that you go there to relax. You go there for some solitude. You don't go there to see another 1,000 people like you mm-hmm. do at Lake Eola a lot of days.
You'd be happy to see 1,000 people enjoying that park though, right?
Well, I think that the green space is a place that for people can use it for whatever they want. When we had our rally and support out this weekend, we had a couple hundred people in the park, and everybody was sharing a story of how they utilize the park. And some of them were very heartwarming, and some of it was just everyday life that they live in one of the condos right near, and that that's the only place that they can go to take their dog for a real walk.
Mm-hmm. Greg Logan, let me ask you this question. I mean, should some things, whether you're talking about a historic tree, an old building, should some things be sacred and be kind of above development? Or is there always an argument for knocking something down and putting something else in its place?
Oh, who doesn't love a tree? Who doesn't love green space? Who wants to see, you know, green space taken away? You know, nobody does. But I assume you live in a house.
Yes.
Is that house made of wood?
No.
Oh, no. It's a tent?
It's concrete block.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The whole house. Oh, that's amazing. Usually in Orlando, the first floor is concrete block and the second floor is made out of wood and wood mm-hmm. frame. But chances are there were trees on that lot where your house was. And chances are, do you know if there were trees on that lot when your house was built?
Oh, certainly, yes.
Yeah, they probably had to knock down some trees to build it. And, mm-hmm. and most of the homes that are built have trees in them too. So it's a matter of which trees do you say are the special ones. You know, do we save this tree? Maybe this tree should be saved. Maybe this is a very special tree. But then we're going to go knock down some trees in the suburbs somewhere to probably use up more land and probably take down more trees to mm-hmm. save this tree. So where's the right place where we put that development? To say it's a choice between no development and development really is unfair. Mm-hmm. Who is it that's moving into those apartments that are being built? It's the children of the boomers. It's our kids. It's not that, you know, somebody's moving here from somewhere else. It could be some of that. But it's largely, you know, kids who grew up here and families. And now those kids want to go out and create their own household. Where should they be doing that? Do we want them to go out in the suburbs on a development somewhere that we're going to knock down some other trees? Or do we put it, you know, downtown where they won't need a car and won't be polluting the air and can walk to work and walk to services and so on? Really, it's a choice of where should we be putting development, not whether we save this tree here or those trees over there. I know that's a difficult choice. And, mm-hmm. you know, nobody wants to come out and say they're in favor of knocking down trees. I'm certainly not saying that or saying that you know, green space isn't special. It's a matter of which green space and which trees. And, you know, I would just suggest that, you know, putting denser development on a very small amount of land in the downtown area will help to preserve trees elsewhere and use less land and put less cars on the road and less pollution. And I think that's a smart thing for us to think about doing.
When you make the argument, though, about, you know, should you save this tree or that tree, mm-hmm. I mean, that argument has been made. There is a list of significant trees that the city has drawn up, and mm-hmm. this is one of them. So mm-hmm. you could say that, well, the line's already been drawn.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a tree expert. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at it from the perspective of where you put growth and where you don't put growth. And it is interesting that the city didn't renew their lease and that the land has not really been formally acquired as a park. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's such a special place, you would think that the city would have renewed the lease and would have acquired the land and made it into a park and so they could preserve it. That is, you know, the public sector's role. Again, I'm not an expert on that. I don't know why they haven't done that.
Well, Eric, let me ask you about the land itself. I mean, how big is that parcel? If there is an argument for developing on it, how suitable is it for building on? I've heard that there are some issues with, you know, the quality of the land.
Oh, that's a whole other issue about the density. It's a whole city block. And from what I understand, on the west side to the east side, it would have to be a different height because it is in an FAA flight path for the executive airport. So, and then also there's an argument that on the east side of that land, that it's primarily a peat bog and that they don't know how high that they could build up just because of the stability of the land, whether they would have to do pilings or something like that. Also, I just wanted to mention, too, about density, that a lot of the building, if not almost exclusively, except for, I think, one project over in Ivanhoe Village, those are all apartments. And most of them are one and two bedrooms, some three bedroom apartments available. So if you have a family that is going to be purchasing a house and want to have several kids or two kids, those apartments probably are not the most appropriate for families to purchase. So there is definitely a demographic that I agree that they want to live in an urban setting, that they want to rely less on their cars, that they want to be more in an urban atmosphere. But if you're going to have a family with three kids and two dogs, I really don't know how many people are going to be wanting to live in a high-rise downtown mm-hmm. in an apartment.
Maybe that's just the way people have been acculturated, though, here. I mean, it seems like a bit of a right to have, you know, a house on a piece of land, a backyard for a family.
Well, sure.
It's about 10% of the growth right now of households is – you know, traditional families with kids is mm-hmm. about 10% of households, new households. You know, about 90% are not. Right now we have the biggest generation in history, you know, about 80 million of them, Generation Y, who are mostly in one- and two-person households. And right now they're looking to rent mm-hmm. and they want to be in the urban area. And there's, you know, as I said before, there's, you know, many more people who commute in and out of downtown than actually live there today. So for the question of housing demand and the need for these kinds of units, there's really not much question of that.
Mm-hmm. You talk about the shift in people, you know, not wanting to own a car perhaps, or, you know, wanting to be close to where they live, close to where they work. What about the idea of living in a multi-level apartment building? Is that something that you can see families from this new generation wanting to do?
Most of this generation right now that are moving into the apartments downtown are not in families. They're mostly singles, couples, roommates. But if you look around the downtown area, new mid-rise and high-rise apartments are being leased up at a rate of 30 units, you know, per month mm-hmm. In the downtown area. If you look at Sky House or any of the other, you know, new apartments that have come up in the area are just up the street, you know, on Lake Eola. Those units are in very high demand from, you know, households, young households, 18 to 35 year olds who are predominantly non-family.
Mm-hmm. So obviously there's a lot of a lot of support for saving the tree. If you're a developer and you're looking to develop on a piece of land which has this kind of historic resonance, what's the blowback?
Well, again, nobody wants to be, you know, seen as knocking down, you know, special places. And, you know, who is in favor of that? I don't know anyone who's in favor of that. The reality is that when we are creating communities, like, you know, talking about the house where you live, that where there may have been trees there as well, is you know, a consequence of development. If you're the developer, maybe, you know, something you'd look at is it possible to buy this site and develop around the tree? You know, typically the things that are going to drive that will be the economics. What kind of yield do you need to get? How much development do you need to get on this site relative to what the Crudisos may be asking to sell that site for? The economics will affect that. As was mentioned by Eric a minute ago, there may be some height restrictions. The city is going to govern what kind of density can put there, how many units can be put there. And maybe there's a scenario where you can develop around the tree. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm not the developer.
Well, Eric, I mean, the tree has a pretty big canopy. Is that
it's right in the middle of the lot. And not only that, there's seven other trees that are also significant, two of them which could also be historical trees. We're doing the measurements and having an arborist go out and research that. So it might not be just the largest tree, but some of the other sisters on the same lot.
Mm-hmm. What about other significant trees in the city? I mean, given the, you know, what's been generated around this particular issue, are you worried about some of those other trees on that list?
Not on that. Most of those other ones on the list are in a city park that is a city park and designated as such. Mm-hmm. So, but there are other historic trees that I think now that this has become in the forefront of somebody's in so many people's minds that they're going to want to preserve their trees, and that could those historic trees could be on public, private land. It doesn't matter. They can still be designated historic.
Mm-hmm. How much protection do you give a tree, though, if it's designated historic, if it's on a private piece of land?
Well, I think that remains to be seen. Mayor Dyer said in his statement on Friday that they're going to use all the legal resources that the city can. So I think that is really admirable. I think that the mayor's office and the city of Orlando's approach on this Constitution Green issue is really commendable.
Mm-hmm. Well, Greg, we understand the city's in talks with the Caruso family about buying Constitution Green at a fair market price. I mean, can you give us a ballpark? What would a piece of land of that size in the city go for?
Oh, I really don't want to speculate on that. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, Eric's a realtor. Maybe he has an idea on that. I guess my question I would wonder is, you know, is it about the tree? Is it... if it wasn't for the tree, Eric, is your community embracing of more development coming in the downtown area? Is it just that you want to save this tree? And, cool. And so if there was another, you know, city block next door that didn't have a tree, you'd welcome this, having some new neighbors with open arms.
A parking lot, for example.
Well, I think there's a balance. It's about the green space to development, as long as people have enough green space. So I think that smart, urban, densely populated, like we're experiencing right now, for the most part, I think it's a really great thing. But I think that there needs to be a balance. A lot of property values hinge on the tree canopy coverage, the brick streets. They like the quaintness of Thornton Park or Lake Davis or some of these other areas. And I think that if you can balance the development with the green space, that would be the ideal situation.
Mm-hmm. I've been speaking to Eric Rawlings. He's from the Soil and Water Conservation Board. He's spearheading an effort to save the tree on Constitution Green. Eric, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
We've also been joined by Greg Logan. He's a real estate analyst with RCL Co. Greg, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Support for Intersection comes from Florida Hospital and from our listeners. The conversation continues online at WMFE.org. Our producer this week is Catherine Welch. You can follow her on Twitter at CWelchFL. I'm Matthew Petty. Follow me on Twitter at Matthew_Petty. Thanks for listening.